voice of reason in the medical world. Dr. Fred Brown from Griffin Health talks to Melissa in the morning on WICC 600.
Happy New Year, Dr. Brown. Welcome back. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Melissa?
I'm doing fine. I feel bad being like, hey, welcome back. It's an easy transition. Nope. I'm sure you went back to work and you were like, oh my God, what is going on?
I know.
It's insane.
I know. It is definitely very, very busy and for a whole bunch of different reasons at hospitals now.
Yeah, I have to say, Dr. Brown, where I work out, ironically, because we have very similar schedules to doctors and nurses, I see a lot of healthcare professionals, and they are tired. They are so tired. I feel horrible. They look very similar to how they did in the beginning of the pandemic, and it's heartbreaking. Oh, it's awful. I feel bad. I'm wondering, what are you guys? I mean, why don't we start right there? Hospitalizations, we're now over 1,600. Our infection rate is through the roof. It's as high as it was in May of 2020.
Right.
We kind of expected this, though, right?
We did. We expected to see an uptick, expected to see a lot of people get sick from Omicron. And then just by the sheer numbers of people being sick, that leads to hospital visits and hospitalizations. And that's what we're seeing. I will tell you, though, that the majority of the people, mild to moderate illness from this. It's not the same, even though it seems like the same, at least the rate wise, it is definitely not the same that we're seeing in hospitals. You know, it's not the same death. It's not the same. It's not the same sort of concern. I mean, we have concern, but it's not the same sort of panic that we had early.
Sure.
I mean, there was panic. It was like, oh my God, who's going to get it? And
right.
Then if you're going to get it, you're going to die. That's actually not the case anymore.
Which is good. That's a good thing.
It is a very good thing. The only thing is that what we're seeing is in our intensive care unit and the people that are dying are the unvaccinated.
Okay, so I was glad that you brought that up because I'm noticing as the hospitalizations go up, we're still seeing anywhere between 60 to 70%. I'm being generous. 60 to 70% of the people who are in the hospital beds are unvaccinated. So, of course, you know, you still have somewhere around, you know, 45%, 40% of the people who are fully vaccinated ending
Correct.
Up in the hospital bed. So, of course, you know, I'm hearing from the other side saying, hey, you know, it's, you know, we're seeing more and more people who are vaccinated end up in hospital beds. But you're saying the ones in the intensive care unit, those are pretty much all unvaccinated.
That's correct. Yeah.
Okay.
And that's what it's looking like around the state. Is that the people who are on ventilators, unvaccinated. People who are in the intensive care unit are doing poorly, the unvaccinated. Now, listen, I think people just need to remember that even in a normal flu year, there's going to be people who get admitted and get really sick and potentially die from the flu. We know that. And that actually takes a lot of pieces. So there's a lot of pieces associated with that. You know, there's a lot of comorbidities, so other illnesses that they have. If you have someone who has severe lung disease, who's on oxygen, you know, who basically have very little reserve, and then you throw a respiratory infection on top of that, their reserves go to zero. And those are, you know, if you follow sort of the vaccinated, that's sort of the next group.
Wow.
So people are the people who need to be very careful if they get any type of infection.
Mm-hmm. No, and that's, I'm glad that you're bringing that up. We're talking to Dr. Brown this morning. Of course, what else? COVID. We're chatting about the latest with COVID. Now, I'm also seeing that children hospitalizations, those are up as well.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. Yes. And you and I have talked about this before, that, you know, the concern was, is that you have COVID-19 that was affecting mainly adults and older adults. And then as we saw strains come and go, we noticed that they were starting to infect sort of the population that wasn't vaccinated or had not gotten infected before. So we are starting to see younger people get infected. I will tell you that, you know, we are now seeing 20-year-olds, you know, with mild asthma that are unvaccinated and are not doing well. That's new. We did not see that before. So I'm again, that's another sort of plug for younger people need to get vaccinated also.
And the other thing, too, that I'm seeing, Dr. Brown, is that for young people who can't get vaccinated, my kid falls in that category, so of course that's my concern, is that the type of mask they're wearing also matters. You know, the right coverage and if they're cloth versus this or versus that. What would you recommend? What do you recommend to parents, whether their kids are fully vaccinated, half vaccinated, not vaccinated at all? What do you recommend in the mask department?
In the mask department, I can tell you sort of from the hospital standpoint, we've done very well with those paper masks that you see sort of everybody wear, either blue, black, yellow. The disposables.
Okay.
They work very well. I mean, and the majority of them, if not all of them, are really designed for preventing the spread of droplets. And, you know, there's still a lot of talk about N95s and KN95s, and again, you're going to get a little additional protection from those, but the paper masks work very well, very, very well. So if you know, and they're a little easier to breathe in. If they get wet, you know, they get thrown out. They're a lot more tolerated. You can tolerate them a lot more than you can the cloth masks. So those are the ones that I personally use and personally we use in the hospital.
And this is more of a personal question because I'm not going to call anyone out specifically, but I have seen people do this. They are literally disposable masks because you should throw them out. How long should you wear a disposable mask before you get a new one? Like, is 1 or 2 days? And I don't know. Sometimes I see people who are still wearing the same disposable mask. I'm gonna go out on a limb and say for months.
Yeah, that's too long.
Yeah,
we sort of have a rule of thumb. Listen, they are disposables, and What the recommendation is that you should wear them, you know, again, you should wear them, and if they get visibly dirty, if they start to get sort of frayed, throw them out. So that's usually a day or two.
Okay. All right. And also really quick, Dr. Brown, before we take a break, I do also have a question about the KN95 masks. We had someone with an inquiry asking if they are as thick as they were in the beginning, asking about the material because they feel they've been ordering them since the beginning of the pandemic and they feel the quality has gone down, especially since the CDC made it got rid of the emergency use authorization title. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I do. I mean, that's the problem is that, you know, in the hospitals, we are not using KN95s. We are using N95 masks, and they have to go through a pretty rigorous evaluation to fit into that category. There's a lot of variability with the KN95s. As I said, you'll probably get a little bit more protection than you would for a paper mask that we just described, but it's probably not the same as a true N95 that we wear in the hospital. And actually, that's not necessarily a bad thing because we would probably have a lot of people passing out. I mean, real N95s are very restrictive in breathing, and that becomes another issue that I have sort of as a, you know, personally and as an epidemiologist. My concern about, you know, good N95s or even KN95s is if people can't breathe, they just keep taking them off. They keep sliding them off or putting them under their chin, or you're more likely to take them off. And keep them on less frequently than you would a paper mask, which is pretty comfortable to keep on for an entire day.
That's a good point. Dr. Brown is here of Griffin Health. He's our infectious disease expert on the show. Dr. Brown, let's talk about these at-home COVID tests.
Okay.
Let's talk about them because, you know, so, and maybe I'm stepping out of where I should be. Like, maybe I'm not in my right zone here. So that's where I would prefer to have you talk about it. First of all,
Thanks.
You're welcome. You know, you've got the degree in it. And I just feel like I'm an honorary member of the infectious disease team, but I'm not really one of them. I just feel like people are flying to go get these tests and sitting in traffic and having headaches over these tests when I don't think it's necessary. Now, I'm going to just say I understand why people want them. Peace of mind. Oh my God, I've got symptoms. Oh my gosh, I got exposed. I don't want to stand in line. Fine. But they're not even 100% accurate. And I just don't. To me, I feel like I'm wondering why, about 2 years into this, why we aren't just using common knowledge and saying, hey, I've got flu-like symptoms, or I know enough about COVID to say I should just probably stay home, or I should just assume I have COVID, unless it gets to a point where you really need to go to the hospital. But Can you just comment on the at-home tests, like how necessary they really
are? That's actually great. I don't know if you need me to say anything. I mean, that's fantastic.
I'm sorry. I just feel badly.
True.
I don't know.
It is, and you'll hear a lot of people say, you know, it really is about, you know, using your common sense. So, and I find that, you know, there just needs a little bit more instruction on if you are going to use an at-home test. So right now we are in an uptick. You know, 23% of the population who test are testing positive. That's a very high number.
Yeah.
So the likelihood is that you have COVID-19. If you don't have COVID-19, there's a possibility you might have the flu. Either way, if you're feeling bad, you know, those are the logical thing is to stay home, you know, and get better. Now, if you are going to use a test, the problem with the test is that there is a lot of false negatives. So that means that, especially now when there's a lot of people who actually have it, so if there's a false negative, I just don't want people to sort of get the, you know, if they get the antigen test, you know, the home test, they take it and they find it's negative and say, oh, great, I'm negative. You know, I'm going to, you know, Big Y or ShopRite or wherever and sort of not worry about it, not wear a mask and sort of go on
right.
with life. That's my bigger concern, because that's just going to spread it even more.
Right.
And I've had several colleagues who have actually, or people, I should say, colleagues, several people who've actually gotten it, and the first test is negative, but they still have symptoms. They do a second round 2 or 3 days later, and it's positive.
Mm-hmm.
So it is really a concern. And then the second thing is that if you do have symptoms and it does become positive, there's really no need to do PCR at that point. It's already positive. You have symptoms. It's very predominant. It's probably positive. You know, you need to isolate for 5 days and make sure you're very cautious for the remaining 5 days.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really where it is. So people need to use common sense. I'm not sure what they're waiting in line for if they do have symptoms. So there are different issues. Now, there's some issues, too, about, you know, retesting to get back to work. There's been some confusion out there. If you actually test positive, the likelihood that you're going to test positive again, at least on a PCR test, the likelihood that you're going to test positive again is really high.
Right. It's like, I remember you saying that.
Yes.
You were like, when I got COVID, you were like, don't even bother testing. It's going to show that you're still positive. I was like, what? That stinks.
Yeah. Yeah. And if it didn't, then it's a false negative.
Right.
So, and that could be up to 90 days.
I remember you saying this to me. Mm-hmm. Yes, because I think in order for me to get on the plane, you had to write a letter for me saying,
right.
Yes, no, she tested positive for COVID, but if she, remember you saying that. Okay, well,
absolutely.
Yeah, I mean,
so that's the other piece.
Yeah.
So there was some data that came out, or there was some advice that came out from mm-hmm. the CDC before sort of they changed, they kind of brought it back quickly, and it was, you know, if you test positive, test again before you go back to work to see if you're negative. And I'm like, whoa, don't do that.
Right, exactly, because you're never going to go back to work.
You'll never get back to work.
Yeah, you're going to be stuck at home. Now, Dr. Brown, I know people do have questions because they do have the at-home test. And look, I'm not saying it's bad.
Yeah.
I just know that there are a lot of people who are upset that not enough tests are being sent out and so on and so on. I just want to bring some calmness to your household. If you were someone who missed out on the test, it's okay. You're good. You're fine. I missed out
exactly.
on them too. You're all good. That's what I'm trying to say. It's not that it's bad. It's another tool in the toolkit. It's a good thing.
Absolutely. No.
Yeah.
And hopefully I wasn't saying that it was bad. It's just.
Oh, I think I was.
People
not
just,
you.
Oh.
You're good. It was me. It was more to rebut myself. No, you were eloquent and classy as always. It was me who was a little rambunctious, if you will. So no, you're good.
Yeah, I mean, you're exactly right, Melissa. It's a tool. It's a tool that you use, and again, it's a good tool right now because it's very positive. The concern is going to be is when this wave ends, which hopefully it'll happen as quickly as it did in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
When this ends, I don't want people to think that, okay, I'm going to use the test, you know, as sort of a regular screening or a regular use, because if you don't have symptoms, the likelihood that it's going to be a false negative is even higher.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be really careful about using that test. So just keep that in mind. So if you were negative or you have a significant exposure, it's still better to do a PCR.
Mm-hmm. And if you do have one of those at-home tests, I know if you read the back of those boxes, every single one has directions on how to do it. But we are seeing, Dr. Brown, that people are not doing it correctly. What do you suggest when people do these at-home tests?
They got to read the instruction. There's actually two really important things. One is they need to read the instruction. The second thing is, before you use the test, you might want to take a look at the FDA website, because new strains actually don't, they're completely different tests than PCR, so new strains may not be detected on the antigen testing. Now, the one that's going out right now, the two that are actually out, the Binax Now and another one that's being distributed by the state, it appears to work, but there are a lot of others that do not work on that strain.
Okay, so even if you test negative, it may not show, like if you test negative, that may, again, be a false negative because it's not picking up on the Omicron.
That's correct. Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. And there's a big difference between the antigen test, the take-home test, and the PCR. The antigen test is what we would call a static test. So it has certain proteins that will detect that are related to the virus. And it doesn't change. Those are the proteins that it's going to detect. It's always going to detect them. Those proteins are there, it's going to be positive. Those proteins aren't there, it's not going to be positive. The PCR is actually a more dynamic test. So it actually checks very stable aspects of the genetic code of the virus, and it can be modified, or if there's any abnormalities associated with those, then it actually can be sent to the state or to, you know, a higher level lab to do genetic sequencing to see what strain it is.
Well, Dr. Brown, I wish I could talk to you for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours, but I'll take the 20 minutes that I get with you. Thank you so much for always taking our questions. We appreciate it.
You're welcome, Melissa. Have a good day.
All right. Thanks. You too. We'll talk to you again next week.